eKatra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of eKatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we are moving into the world of, an American literary giant. We're tackling a really foundational work, James Baldwin's collection of essays, Notes of a Native Son. Yeah, this book, it's more than just a document of the civil rights era, isn't it? It feels like it provides the emotional and intellectual framework for understanding so much about modern America. It really demands a reckoning, not just with politics, but with something deeper. Maybe the American soul itself.
That's a great way to put it. A failure of the soul.
Okay, so let's unpack this a bit. No. Our mission here is to really get at Baldwin's core argument. He seems to be saying that being black in America isn't just, you know, a social or political problem.
Right. It's deeper. It's psychological, existential even. He's talking about the internal wound that racism inflicts.
Exactly. And that's why it still feels so relevant, I think.
Absolutely. Baldwin isn't just criticizing from the outside. He's holding up this mirror, a really uncomfortable mirror sometimes.
Forcing us, the reader, to look at how we define humanity itself, especially when society seems built on, on dehumanizing people.
And the big question he keeps circling back to is, how do you hold on to your own humanity, your love, your hope, when you're facing that constant systemic hostility? It's profound.
That intellectual frame is powerful, definitely. But with Baldwin, it always comes back to the personal, doesn't it? The raw honesty. So who was this writer? How could he blend that kind of autobiographical pain with such sharp, almost detached analysis?
Well, James Baldwin, born 1924, died in 87. He was just a towering figure. Essayist, novelist, playwright, crucial voice in the civil rights movement.
And his background?
Harlem. Born and raised in Harlem. Yeah. Had a really complex, often difficult relationship with his stepfather, who was a preacher. That tension, that early struggle against bitterness at home and racism outside, that really fuels his early writing.
So that's the insider part.
That's the insider part. He lived it. But then what gives him this incredible authority, this distinctive perspective, is the outsider element. In 1948, he moved to Paris.
The classic American artist move, go abroad to find perspective.
Exactly. But for Baldwin, it wasn't about escaping America so much as seeing it more clearly, gaining that physical and intellectual distance.
I see.
So he could analyze American racism, not just with the, you know, the immediate passion of someone suffering it daily, but also with the cool, sharp eye of an artist looking back.
So it's this fusion, personal testimony and intellectual analysis.
Precisely. He uses his own pain, his family's trauma, his rage as the raw material, but he shapes it into this moral indictment, not just of America, but maybe of the whole Western world. He's writing as a witness, a moral witness.
Okay, let's talk about the book itself. Notes of a Native Son, published 1955. It's a collection of 10 essays.
Right. And a reading, it feels like looking at a mosaic, doesn't it? Different pieces, different places, Harlem, the South, Europe, different kinds of writing.
Yeah, memoir, criticism, social commentary.
But it all fits together to create this incredibly powerful, sometimes devastating picture.
So it's not like a straightforward argument then?
Not exactly linear, no. It's more an exploration, circling around these core issues of race, identity, culture. But the central thread, like we said, is always the psychological impact of racism.
This racial poison, as he calls it.
That's the term. How it corrodes the human heart, both the person experiencing the racism and the person perpetuating it. That's key for Baldwin.
And the journey through the book.
Yeah.
It seems to follow his own developing understanding.
I think so, yeah. It starts with him kind of clearing the ground, right? Mm-hmm. Critiquing other black literature, defining his own artistic space.
Then he moves into that vivid observation of Harlem life experiences in the American South.
Mm-hmm. And then it broadens out, using his time in Europe, France, and Switzerland to reflect back on American identity, on what whiteness and blackness even mean in a global historical context.
So the ambition is huge.
Oh, absolutely. It's nothing less than forcing America, forcing us to confront our history, our present, and what it actually means to be human when race defines so much.
And he really believed you couldn't fix one part without the other, right? Black and white destinies linked.
Fundamentally intertwined. That's central to his whole worldview. Mm. You can't liberate one group in isolation.
Okay, so let's dig into some of those specific essays. He starts off, maybe surprisingly, with critique.
Yeah, he really clears the decks first. He launches this quite pointed critique of what he calls the protest novel. Mm. He talks about Uncle Tom's Cabin, but maybe more controversially, Richard Wright's Native Son,
which was a hugely important book itself. So what was Baldwin's issue?
Okay, this is where it gets really interesting, like you said. He argues that these novels, even though they're obviously written with good intentions, with moral outrage, they ultimately fail artistically and morally.
Oh.
Because they simplify people. They create these categories. The pure suffering victim on one side, the purely evil oppressor on the other. And in doing that, they rob the characters of their complexity, their messiness, their humanity.
So it's not real life. It flattens people out.
Exactly. He calls it a failure of moral imagination, which is a really profound point. If you make the villains into inhuman monsters, you actually fail to understand how real-world oppression works, because it often relies on the choices, the complicity, the sort of mundane evil of ordinary people.
Wait, so this failure of moral imagination, is he saying that by making the bad guys just pure evil, we kind of let ourselves off the hook? We don't see how we or how society allows that evil to happen?
That's a huge part of it, yes. And it applies to the victims, too. If a character like Bigger Thomas in Native Son is only defined by the hatred directed at him,
then he has no inner life of his own.
Yeah.
No agency beyond reacting to racism.
Precisely. Baldwin argues that accepting that portrayal basically means accepting the racist premise that a person is reducible to their oppression. And Baldwin just refuses that. He insists on the complexity, the inner world, for everyone. He won't let white rage define blackness.
Wow. Okay, that sets up his own approach perfectly then. Which leads us to maybe the most famous piece in the book, the title essay, Notes of a Native Son.
Yeah, this is the emotional core. It's just breathtaking the way he weaves together two huge, intense events. The death of his stepfather, that bitter, complicated figure, and the Harlem riot of 1943 erupting around the same time.
Personal grief and public fury colliding.
Exactly. And he uses it to explore this terrifying inheritance of rage. He recognizes his father's bitterness, that corrosive hatred born from years of oppression. He recognizes it inside himself.
That must have been a scary realization.
Terrifying. And there's this key moment, this revelation. After an incident of discrimination in a restaurant, he flies into this blind fury. He almost destroys the place, almost gets himself killed.
And that shakes him.
Profoundly. He realizes, and this is the quote that resonates, "Hatred, which could destroy so much, never failed to destroy the man who hated." That insight, that hate consumes the hater. That's the psychological core we talk about, isn't it?
Yeah. It connects his father's personal tragedy to this larger, almost political need for self-preservation in the face of injustice.
Yeah.
You have to fight the hate inside you, too.
It is the ultimate act of self-preservation for him, identifying the enemy within as well as without. It's about staying whole, staying sane.
And that search for sanity, for perspective, takes him away from America,
yeah,
right? To Europe.
Yeah.
Which gives us the essay, Stranger in the Village.
Mm-hmm. An incredible piece. He finds himself in this tiny, remote Swiss village. Apparently, he's the first black person many of the villagers have ever seen.
So they treat him like a curiosity.
Exactly. With this kind of innocent, almost anthropological fascination, like he's an exotic object. But Baldwin uses this innocence to reflect on history. He sees that their innocence is actually a kind of historical blindness. They don't see the connection between their quaint village and the centuries of European colonialism, exploitation, and power that ultimately created the situation of the American Negro.
Ah, so he connects their innocence to a history they'd rather ignore.
Precisely. He realizes that the black person in America is fundamentally a creation of the West, the bastard of the West, he calls it. And his mere presence there in that village links them inescapably to that difficult, violent history.
So standing in the Swiss Alps helps him see America more clearly. What's the takeaway?
It totally elevates the whole issue. It's not just an American domestic problem anymore. It becomes a central drama of Western civilization itself. And it hammers home the idea that black and white people in America are bound together. They have, in a way, created each other through history, through conflict, through culture. Their identities, their fates are indivisible. You can't understand one without the other.
Okay, so if we zoom out from those specific essays, what are the main sort of overarching themes or messages that Baldwin is driving home in this collection? The big takeaways.
I think we can pull out three main pillars. The first, and maybe the most fundamental, is what we just touched on, the inescapable link.
Black and white destinies tied together.
Absolutely. He insists on it. He argues that white identity in America was historically constructed against blackness. It needed a black other to define itself.
So the idea that white America could just ignore the Negro problem, as it was called.
Yeah.
That was always a fantasy, a delusion.
A foundational delusion, yes. Baldwin says the Negro problem is really a white problem. It's an American problem.
Yeah.
And liberation has to be mutual. He talks about history living within us. White Americans, he implies, can't be free either if they don't confront the psychological baggage of their own constructed identity. They stay trapped by the past, too.
Okay, that's huge. What's the second theme?
The second is the psychological burden. He never lets you forget the sheer weight of living with racism every day, that constant corrosive racial poison.
The internal struggle.
The relentless internal struggle just to stay sane, to feel whole, when the world around you is constantly trying to dehumanize you. It's that existential conditioning and the energy it takes just to assert your own selfhood against prejudice.
The cost of never just being, always being defined by others, always on guard.
And that leads directly to the third theme, which is maybe the most challenging one. It's about difficult love versus rage.
Okay. What does he mean by difficult love?
He advocates for this really rigorous, clear-eyed kind of love. It's not sentimental or easy. It's demanding. It insists on seeing the humanity in everyone, even your opponents, even those upholding the system you're fighting.
While still fighting for justice.
Absolutely. It's not passive acceptance. But he argues that rage, while understandable, necessary sometimes even, is ultimately self-destructive if it becomes your only response. Hate, he believes, is a defense mechanism. It shields you from deeper pain, but it also destroys you.
So choosing this difficult love, it's a kind of discipline, a way to stay whole while fighting.
Exactly. It's the ultimate act of moral and intellectual discipline for Baldwin. It's the only path, he thinks, that ensures the fighter isn't consumed by the fight itself.
Man, Baldwin just drops these lines that... Yeah, they stick with you, don't they? Like little philosophical anchors. Maybe we should share a few of those core ideas that really capture his thinking.
Yeah, he was incredibly quotable. His insights just cut right through.
Okay, thinking about history. He has that line. It is a sentimental error to believe that the past is dead.
So powerful. History isn't over. It's not even past, as Faulkner said. It's a living force, Baldwin insists, shaping everything right now, whether we admit it or not.
So you can't just... ignore it or move on.
No, you have to face it directly. Otherwise, it just keeps poisoning the present. He's warning against that kind of willful historical amnesia.
And then on power, this one feels really radical. The world is not white. White is a metaphor for power.
Yeah, that just reframes the whole conversation, doesn't it? He's saying whiteness isn't really about biology or skin color. It's a political construct, a social agreement created to maintain dominance.
So it's about hierarchy, not race, per se.
Exactly. And once you see it as a metaphor for power, the fight changes. It becomes about dismantling that hierarchy, which is built on, essentially, a fiction.
And maybe the most essential one, the call to action. Not everything that is faced can be changed, but nothing can be changed until it is faced.
That's the bedrock, isn't it? It grounds all the philosophy and necessary action. You must tell the truth. You must confront reality, however painful, however difficult.
Even if it feels like you can't fix it all right away.
Especially then. Facing it is the non-negotiable first step towards any kind of justice or change. It's about courage.
And these ideas.
Yeah.
They aren't just, you know, historical artifacts or literary theory. They feel incredibly applicable now, like tools for living today.
Oh, absolutely. Think about just personal growth. That core lesson, hate destroys the hater. That's huge for emotional intelligence, isn't it?
How so?
Well, every time you feel that rush of anger, that fury, Baldwin kind of invites you to pause, to analyze it. Is this righteous anger that can fuel constructive action? Or is it becoming a blind rage that's just going to burn you out, make you bitter, destroy you?
It forces a kind of honest self-check. Painful, maybe, but necessary.
Right. And think about media literacy. We should constantly use Baldwin's critique of the protest novel. When you encounter any narrative, news, movies, books, whatever, ask yourself, is this simplifying things?
Is it making one side pure good and the other pure evil? Propaganda.
Or does it try to capture the messy, complicated reality of human beings? Does it allow for nuance? Baldwin pushes us to resist that easy polarization and look for the harder, complex truths.
And for engaging in society, for activism?
He points towards a more mature kind of activism, I think. One grounded in clear principles, not just sentiment or rage. It's about the hard, slow work of changing hearts and minds, that difficult love again. That's what leads to sustainable progress, he suggests, not just temporary victories.
Looking back across all this, what really stands out to me is that demand for difficult love. It's audacious, isn't it? It's not about being soft. It's about this rigorous insistence on seeing humanity, even when it's hard. And it shows how the biggest struggles for social justice, for equality, they're ultimately fought inside us, in the human heart. He connects that deeply personal stuff, like his relationship with his father, to the huge political questions about the country's future.
Yeah, that connection is vital. And maybe for you, listening, the biggest takeaway is just that. This book forces self-examination. It demands it. Baldwin's enduring legacy is that prophetic voice, insisting again and again that our shared humanity, however fractured, however painful, is the only real foundation we have to build a better society.
Confronting the past, not to assign blame, maybe, but to free ourselves now.
To liberate our future from the lies we've inherited. That's the challenge he leaves us with.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.